Tape identification. This is an oral history recording recorded at the residence of Ruth Gottlieb at Westview Grove in Miramar. It's 11:30 in the morning on the 11th of March 2015. It's a grey, cloudy day outside with a little bit of drizzle, but very calm. My name is Garbal Tort, local and New Zealand history specialist at Wellington City Libraries. Ruth, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. As you have just heard, I am Ruth Gottlieb. I have lived here for the past 35, 36 years. We were the first people in this home when the subdivision was first built, and I would say we were about the fifth people to buy a house here. Wonderful neighbours, wonderful place to live.
Now, you are a very well-known name in Wellington, been honoured by the city and honoured by the Crown. Long experience within the Wellington City Council and also the Wellington Harbour Board during that time. But I'm wondering if you could take us right back to the very start and the story of your early life, which I believe began in Ireland, and how you came to come to New Zealand. But first of all, where and when were you born?
Well, I was born in England, and I went to Ireland as a child, a couple of years old. My youngest sister was born in Ireland. I had my childhood in Cork, in Ireland. I had my schooling in Ireland. I was well into my teens when we came to this part of the world. My father was a rabbi in Cork. In fact, I say to people that I'm Irish and I'm Jewish. I've got two strikes against me. Take your pick.
Had your father been a rabbi in England before he went to
Yes,
Ireland?
Yes, he was a minister in England and then went to Ireland as the minister there in Cork. And we went from Cork to Australia, to Brisbane for some years, and then we came to New Zealand. So I am a Kiwi true blue, but Ireland will always have just a little bit of my heart, Gabor, because I've had my childhood there, I suppose.
And was your family long established in England before going to Ireland, or were they?
I don't know about well established. My daddy was born in London, in Ilford, in a very poor suburb of London. My mummy's family were much more affluent. My mother was born in Manchester, and her family were in Manchester. And we used to go from Cork to Manchester and to London every year to see and visit my maternal and my paternal parents. Our grandparents.
Was your mother also of a ethnic Jewish background?
Yes, very much so. Both grandparents were traditionally Jewish, but my father's family were more religious than my mother's. And my grandfather was a pillar of the synagogue in London. And Daddy, I suppose, took it from his parents. And they were wonderful people, my parents. Absolutely. We had a marvelous upbringing in Ireland, in Australia, Here we were, of course, adult. Mm.
And what was the size of the Jewish community within Cork? I mean, Ireland, I believe, has always had a very good reputation for being extremely tolerant of the Jewish faith. We normally consider it.
Absolutely, Gabriel. We would not have known what the word anti-Semitic meant in Ireland. You are absolutely right. In fact, I can recall at one stage the Prime Minister, Eamon de Valera, which you've probably never heard of, but wonderful man. Somebody wrote to the paper and said, oh, that they were could prove he had some Jewish blood in him. And Eamon de Valera's response was, I don't have a drop, but I would be a better man if I did have. Now that's the kind of, no, it was a small community. In fact, as of today, there would only be a handful of families in Cork. When we lived there, the mayor was Jewish. Of Cork. The mayor of Dublin was Jewish. Dublin had a much bigger Jewish community than Cork, but it was quite a sizable one. Don't ask me how many, I can't recall. But it was a very close-knit community. And we went to secular schools. My older sister went to a Catholic convent to school. I went to an Anglican school, and my younger sister, went to a local school. So we had wonderfully, what do you call it, I suppose, secular upbringing. It really was. We had people from the very highest of society to the refugees who would have been very, very needy and in want, as, I'm trying to think of the word, as lauded visitors in our home, regardless of their background. And that is something that I have always been grateful for, and felt it even stood me in good stead as a counsellor.
And during the time, I mean, it sounds like you had a wonderful childhood. During this time, did the issues of Irish independence and those other tensions that were in society, were they ever something that you were aware of or made up part of your childhood?
They were. They were. But I can truly only think of one incident that brings it to mind, because I can recall there were demonstrations in the street in Ireland. Of course, the British over the years have been very naughty to the Irish. Indeed, the time of the Black and Tans, which is long before my time. But during my time in Cork, I can recall, as I have said, a demonstration, and I can remember my mother holding we three to her bosom, and a man's head was pushed through a shop window close by, not that close, but in the same street, shall I say. That's the only time I can recall what I would say was a disturbance in Ireland. I do vividly recall the wonderful rag days that the university, UCC, the University of Cork, and UCD, the University of Dublin, would get together, and they would have rag days in Cork. Well, we lived for rag day. It was wonderful.
And did this would be the stories that you're telling, they would be before the war, would they?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
And so were you still in Ireland during the war?
No. We were in Australia. in Brisbane.
So what
when
year,
war was declared.
When war was declared. So what year did your family leave?
Oh, I haven't a clue. Don't ask me years, because I can never think what year was which.
And what took your family from Ireland after being
Because my father became the rabbi in Brisbane.
I see.
And the chief rabbi wanted the... asked him if he would go to the colonies, because it was the colonies then, of course. And it was as though we were going to the other ends of the world. We three girls, I'm in the middle, were absolutely so excited, Gabor. We were going on a ship for 6 weeks out to somewhere that we didn't know about, but people told us all kinds of stories that there would be cannibals in the street, we would be eaten, that it would be terribly hot, we would never know anything but summer. In fact, I can well recall sitting in a cold bath all day practically when we first arrived in Brisbane, because the weather in Ireland, we don't see much of the sun there.
Were you sad to leave any, did you have to leave any friends or pets or anything of that
oh,
nature?
Oh yes, I did leave friends. Eileen Maloney was my special, special friend. She would run into our house on probably a Saturday night, I think it used to be. She'd say, quick, lend me your hat, Ruth, I'm going to confession. And things like that. Well, it was wonderful. Eileen Maloney would have been my very best friend. And I would be at her house and she would be at my house. And yes, we left friends in Ireland. But we made lots of new friends in Brisbane. And what a wonderful life I have had here in Wellington.
So you would have been in your teenage years when you arrived in,
yes.
in Brisbane.
Yes.
Mm. And what was life in Brisbane like? I mean, it was quite a transition, I suppose.
There oh, must have been. It certainly was. It definitely was, because there were ants all over the kitchen, and we had never seen ants. And my mother was guilty of putting in the rubbish tin anything that an ant went near, until a neighbour said, you mustn't do that. You just move it and the ants go, and they're perfectly clean. And so we got used to ants. Didn't like them. Got used to them, having been told there would be snakes all over the city and in our beds and everything. There were no snakes. There were nothing like that. It was very hot. I personally did not like the heat and the hot weather of Brisbane. Not one little bit. And so you get used to it. One can cope with anything and everything. And I had a wonderful life in Brisbane too. Lots of friends. I decided my father and mother were a bit pipped at this. They were, because they wanted me to go to university because I'd done very well at school. I didn't want to. I took a job and I worked. Oh, I thought I was extremely clever. Made some friends at work, because it was Mr. T.C. Byrne, such an Irishman. As soon as he read in the paper that the new rabbi of Cork was coming from Ireland, he immediately contacted Daddy. He says, I've got a job for you, Ruth. He had a department store. And so I was, in my element. And that lasted for a few years. And then came the war. And that, of course, brought trying to think of rationing books, that's the word. We were rationed on everything. And I joined the Signal Corps. And I could rat-a-tat-tat-tat,
da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. With the Morse code? Yeah.
Oh, yes, I knew Morse code.
You were transmitting and receiving, were you?
Yes, absolutely.
Sides? And was this radio or telegraph?
This was.
Oh, yes, but yeah. With
the, on the little.
Mm. On the little key.
Yes, key. And I was sent to Bowngilla from Brisbane, which was a camp on the border of New South Wales and Victoria. And I was there till just about the end of the war. And then I came
home. So that was a receiving station? So you were, it was military transmissions that you were working
Well, with? They were very simple transmissions. They were never overseas. It was purely internal. I don't think I did a scrap of good for the war effort. But I thoroughly enjoyed it and the friends I made. And that's not denigrating in any way the women's contributions to the war. Of course, we had the Americans visit.
Tell me about that.
Oh, they were delicious. Oh. You know, your first nylons. Oh, goodness me. And my mother, how she ever did it, we will never know. She would entertain so many of those Americans. My daddy would bring home from the services that he conducted, God knows how many of them, didn't matter how many were there. They came home for dinner or lunch or what have you. I can remember one Passover that we had, must have been 60 extra people. We had an enormous house, first of all, in Brisbane, in Alice Street, just opposite the Botanic Gardens. And the last officer, may not have been an officer, soldier, American soldier, to arrive at the house had to come in the window, which he did. And that I can well recall on this particular evening when we were celebrating Passover. They were wonderful times and very sad times. My older sister married a naval officer and lives in America now. My older sister, she's still very much part and parcel of where she lives in Richmond in Virginia at the moment. My younger sister lives in Karori here.
And so when the war began, I imagine a lot of the young men would have, who you would have been around, perhaps fellow staff members in the department store and so on, did they all charge off and leave the community and fight overseas?
But my personal loss was a wonderful boyfriend. Don't forget I was only 18 at the time. And he, Arthur Moses, I loved him. He was in the infantry. I suppose he was one of my first loves. And he died at El Alamein, getting water for the troops. But when you talk about the war, that's something that is still, I still have the note, the card that he wrote to me when he left Brisbane with the military. And I could show it to you now, and it says at the end, when I get overseas, as I hope to soon, I intend to go to Cork to find out for myself why you love it so. And that was Arthur, and he, as I say, was killed at El Alamein. As I suppose many, I truly can't recall many other close friends that died in the war. There must have been some, but I can't bring them to mind at the moment.
And so the war ended, and you returned to Brisbane? Did you return to your family in Brisbane?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then I married for a wee while and went to Melbourne.
To Melbourne?
Just after the war. And he was a bit of a rat bag, and it only lasted about 5 weeks. But it took me 5 years to get a divorce, because in Victoria there was no restitution of conjugal rights in those days. So it took me 5 years to get a divorce. And in the meantime, I met my darling, Jerry.
And this continued to be in Melbourne, was it? You spent that period in Melbourne?
Well, I had to maintain living in Melbourne during those 5 years, but I would work in Melbourne to earn my fare to come to Australia to work here to earn my fare, which my parents helped me to go back, so that I was domiciled basically in Victoria. And in those days, your husband had to approve and sign permission to travel. But I was able to circumvent it because I knew somebody, I have to admit. Yes.
Now tell me about your husband, Jerry, and he's no longer with us. But
I haven't forgiven him yet for dying on me.
Now, Jerry Gottlieb, what was his background? I mean,
Jerry's parents also came from England. I'm trying to think exactly where from. Newcastle. From Newcastle in England. And his father came first and then brought his mother and all his brothers. And furniture business, the Art Cabinet Company in Willis Street and in the square in Palmerston North was the family business. They also had McFun and Beavis was the manufacturing of furniture for the shop. And Jerry had two brothers and a sister, and the three boys worked in the shop. Jerry worked in the shop and went away to war at the age of 18. And trained to be a pilot. His logbook, I should have his logbook to show you, His was the only thing that Bernard, my brother-in-law, my sister's husband who lives in Karori, wanted when Jerry died. He wanted his logbook. So of course I let him have it.
Did he fight in the war?
Of course.
As a pilot?
He flew in the war, and he flew over Germany and over... Oh, he never told us very much. He certainly, at one time, very reluctantly told me of seeing his best friend go down in smoke in a plane. And, as I say, I if you would like to see his logbook, I can certainly get it. Bernard has it. and I can get that for you, but I don't know of what interest that would be. However, he certainly spent his time in England because he was seconded to an English flying unit and flew from England until the war was over, was in England when peace was declared, and then he came back to New Zealand.
And so how did he come to be in Melbourne? Did you meet in Melbourne?
No, I think I met him here. I think I met him in Wellington first. Yes, I did. I can show you a whole page in the Dominion Post of how Ruth met Jerry. Do you want me to recount it now?
Please.
Why not? Jerry came to our home to deliver a standard lamp. And he asked me to go to the pictures with him. And my younger sister said, when he'd gone, I said, oh, he asked me to go to the pictures, and I think I'll go. And Blanche said, don't go out with him. I said, why not? She said, because I did when we first came. And do you know, at interval, he asked me if I would like an ice cream. And I said, no, thank you. But he brought one back for me and one for himself. And he's a very boisterous person. And when he opened his, it fell on the floor. He immediately leant over, took mine, and said, well, you said you didn't want one anyway. And what's more, she said, his technique isn't that great either. I want you to know, Gabor, I married this wonderful man, and he and my sister Blanche could not have been closer to each other than those two. So that's the story of our meeting. Jerry was in the Art Cabinet Company for many years.
Did the business, had the business been passed to the sons from his parents?
Had it been a family business? Because Dad Gottlieb was still alive when they decided to sell the business. They'd sold Palmerston and they were selling Willis Street. And in the meantime, before they sold it, Jerry left anyway, because Jerry started to make pretzels, because I used to make a pretzel. And we had a wonderful American visitor come to visit, who owned Tollheimer's department store in Richmond, a friend of my sister. And he loved them. And when Tollheimer went back to America, his chef from his department store wrote and asked us for the recipe. So Jerry said, well, if he wants it and he's going to sell it in his department, we're going to make them here. Which he did for some time. He had quite a successful, still on the market, Pretz, P-R-E-T-Z, and Jerry set up a little factory in Coote Street. And finally he sold that, and the people still have it wherever they are. And then Jerry retired. And Jerry used to go with his portable piano, or whatever you call it, to all the residence homes with Laurie Penny, who would sing. And Jerry had made all the songs in big print for the elderly. Everybody adored Jerry. The councillors used to toss up as to who was going to sit with him or stand with him, because there was never a function that I would go to council-wise or holistically, shall I say, for counsel that Jerry did not come with me. He was my greatest support. And the counselors loved him so because he told naughty stories, Gabor. And they would love to hear them.
And so after the your first marriage, you know, the formalities were done with, can you remember what year you married Jerry?
No, but I could look up my marriage certificate. Yeah.
And was that here in...
No, nobody would marry us here because of a Jewish technicality. So we went to Melbourne, where I had a very good friend who managed to circumvent things, and we got married in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Then we came back to Wellington to a very sad, awful happening in the Gottlieb family, because Jerry lost two aunts, two uncles, and a cousin in a plane crash over Rome just after we returned. And that was very tragic for the family, as you can well imagine. What can I tell you after that?
Where were you living? Where were you residing at the time?
When we first came home, we were living up 111 steps in a flat in Garden Road opposite the Botanic Gardens. And can I tell you, you can cut this out as well if you wish. We went to a ball shortly after we moved to that flat. And I got tiddly, I drank too much, and I sat on the bottom step. And I said, I'm not going up these steps. And Jerry carried me up. But ever afterwards, he reminded me that we'd only been married a few months at that stage. I think the inference was he might have left me there if it was longer. But we moved from that flat where we had a wonderful time. We were only there for about a year. And then we moved to Happy Valley Road. We bought a house in Happy Valley Road and spent some wonderful years there. We had two children there, but only two bedrooms. One was a girl and one was a boy. And I must have been having a third one, because it was either give a child away or get a bigger house. Nobody would have one of the children, so we decided we would need a bigger house. So we moved to Island Bay, where we had a marvelous, wonderful few years, because the Barneos were on one side, the Safiotis were in the next street, and the Barneos, the Gottliebs, and the Safiotis are still, so many years later, very, very close friends. And then we moved to, we had four children, three boys and a girl, so we needed four bedrooms. We moved to a large house in Onapu Road in Lyle Bay. And from there, we moved to a smaller house here because Marilyn had married our daughter, and this was great for the three boys, as we had three bedrooms. Two were in here, one in there, and our bedroom there. And it was from here that I got the idea of counsel. How did I first get the idea? Brian Wayburn started Rates Reform, which was a new party. At that stage, there was only Labour and Citizens. Citizens and Labour around the council table.
Now, Citizens were sort of like a local body wing of the National Party, is that right?
They Citizens would have been National.
Yes.
Labour, of course, Labour.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. And he wanted to start a new rates reform and asked me. I said, absolutely not. I don't know anything about the arena. And when he said, can I use your name? The name Gottlieb is well known. I'll just use Ruth Gottlieb. Well, if you want to. Came the elections. Neither Brian nor any of the 14 or however many there were of rates reformers were even looked at. But Ruth Gottlieb was the highest poller. So I thought, perhaps I should educate myself in the arena. And for the next 3 years, I went to council meetings. I wanted to know what it was all about. And Ian Lawrence, who was the deputy mayor.
So this would have been under Sir Michael Fowler's time, would it have been?
This would have been Michael Fowler, yes. And then it was the year that Ian Lawrence stood, that I stood as a councillor. And in those days, you waited in the council chamber or the councillor's room until about 1 o'clock in the morning, because it just came through, oh, this is the first councillor, another hour, the next councillor. We were 18 councillors. And can I tell you that Ruth Gottlieb was the 18th. I hung on with the skin of my teeth, but ever after that I was the highest polling councillor. I'm very happy to say that.
What was the campaigning period like? Was it
wonderful.
You enjoyed it?
I loved it. Mm. I loved it because it was a challenge. Because the Eastern Ward, which you were voted for by wards, and at those we were four, and I would stand giving out my guff in Bay Road, and I can remember every 3 years. I can remember one time I was giving out my guff, I call it all guff, and a gentleman said, Ruth Gottlieb, I wouldn't vote for you. I said, why not? He said, you chaired a hearing recently of my house in Kandala, and you let my neighbour, oh, I said, where was it? And I said, yes, I recall that it was quite recently. But I said, tell me, I added several clauses so that your concerns were looked into. Very much so. Tell me, sir, now that it's in place, is it as bad as you thought it was going to be? Oh, no, he said, absolutely not, nothing like it. But I'm still not going to vote for you, was his answer. That was just one little anecdote. But I loved it several times when Jerry would make little wooden Ruth Gottlieb for council. We'd stick them where we could. And we had a phone call. Oh, Ruth Gottlieb, somebody has defaced your wooden. What had they done? They had crossed off the T and the B of Gottlieb, and it read, Ruth, go lie for council. We left it. We thought, sense of humour, well done. We did. we did. Things like that that caused laughter, wonderful, being with all the other hopefuls. I was so enormously lucky. I was so privileged. Gabor, it's a privilege to serve the people. And I never forgot that sitting round the table. I used to say to Jerry, if I don't get back, I would say this every 3 years, Jerry, I warn you, I will be impossible to live with for half a day, and then I'll get on with my life, because I had witnessed too much grief-stricken, and that's the only word for it, grief-stricken people who had lost out. You cannot, dare not take politics too seriously. You're probably thinking, she can afford to say that because she never lost out. But I always kept it well in mind. I loved every second of all the good, the bad, and the ugly of council. I did not particularly enjoy my 3 years on the regional council. It wasn't hands-on people enough for me. I thoroughly enjoyed the harbour board. It was like a gentleman's club. I was the only woman with 14 men. I had a ball. But I truly can't say that I achieved very much. On council, I certainly did. But as I say, I've been very privileged. And then the health board.
The health board too.
Oh, the health board was a wonderful place to be, because you could achieve things. You were part of making decisions. Well, it was particularly good for me because I was there at the inception of the new hospital. And I sort of see things as I go in the hospital. And I think, oh yes, we decided that. And it really was.
And thinking, you know, right, if we can go right back to the, when you first were elected, that would have been in the early 80s, would that be right?
Oh God.
Something like that, yes. Around the time that Ian
must be.
Lawrence
well,
came
it was when Ian Lawrence
yes.
was.
Yeah. And did you, I mean, had you experience, previous experience? Had you chaired committees in a sports clubs or anything like that nature? Or was this a completely new
no,
game
No, sports
you?
Was never my thing, Gabor. I don't like the wind. I don't like the rain. I don't like the sun. I'm not that shook on fresh air. Why would I play sport, so to speak?
No.
I am not a sports person at all.
But when you went on to council, you were really an independent person.
No,
se.
Well, I was not an independent. I was an independent for many years later, but I went in under the banner of
the rates reform.
Not rates reform. We got nothing. We never got a single vote at all. It was 3 years after that I went in with Labour and what was the other one?
Citizens.
Was called Citizens Party, but it was really national. And I was a raw rookie. And to me, it was at least a 3 year learning curve. First year, certainly. anybody who says they go in and sit around the council table and know what it's all about. I wanted to say a naughty word, but I won't, because it's not so. It's a learning curve, believe me. And there's so much to learn. But I was always one of the people. In fact, my adage would have been that I can truly say, without fear of contradiction, that anybody who ever contacted Ruth Gottlieb with a problem always heard back from me for the 18 years I served round that table. I may not have been able to help them, but at least they knew why. And that I lived by. And I do feel that today we do not have enough conscientious, underlined counselors. I've always said that the greatest value that the ratepayer can have for their dollar is a conscientious counselor, because they go to them and they get done what they need to get done, or they know why they can't get it done. And that is part of the fiber of being a city councillor.